Hi, this is the PNB Archives Committee. My name is Bonnie Simmons. I am the 2006 chair, and my co-convener tonight is Don White from the PNB from Los Angeles, a representative from KPFK. And we have decided that we will have an informal session tonight in place of a traditional and full Archives Committee call. Why don't I go ahead and take roll? Sar Randhawa, I know, is unable to be with us tonight. Bonnie Simmons, I am here. Don White?
Here.
Joe Wanzala has not joined us. Ray LaForest? Tibby Brooks? Mitchell Cohen? Sherna Gluck?
Here.
Lamont Yeke? A.C. Bird?
Here.
Alonzo Brown and Marcelo Tolliver were not able to be informed of the meeting tonight, so they are not with us. Michael Woodson also emailed in that he would be unable to join us. Teresa Allen?
Here.
Deb Shafto?
Here.
Lori Taguma?
Here.
Also joining us are Brian DeShazer, the director of the Pacifica Archives.
Here.
And Addie Gevins.
Yes.
From the Pacifica Archives. And as we are not in committee form tonight with a full quorum, we will be foregoing part of our agenda, which did include a discussion of meeting date and time for future archives meetings. We will forego that, and we will do an assessment of when people are available by email. We will also be foregoing nominations for officers of the committee and a discussion and approval of an election procedure for those officers. And that brings us to a report from Brian DeShazer, the Pacifica Archives Director.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Yay!
Hello. So I think I just want to ask, because I know that there are members on the call that have not been on an archives committee meeting or been around the archives. Lori Taguma, I think you are brand new to Pacifica and the archives.
Exactly.
So I'd like, I'm sorry?
Thank you for recognizing that.
So I think I just want to open up with, does anybody have any basic questions, anything that just sort of has struck you as, like, the first thing I want to find out when I go on the committee is what? Anybody have anything?
Well, why don't you give us a general idea of how many staff are at the at the archives, briefly what they do and what the budget is. And maybe if you have time to tell us what the priorities are right now that you have maybe determined at this point.
Oh, okay.
Can I add to that really good suggestion of Teresa's, that when you talk about budget, if you could talk about how the special assessment and 2% from each station, how that special funding is being used.
Okay.
And also,
go ahead, Don.
Well, also, I think it would be helpful just to give listeners and others an idea of the volume of the contents. You know, it goes back over 50 years, so maybe you could just let us know in general terms the scope of the archives of Pacifica.
Sure, thanks.
And also, I have a special interest in how the affiliate stations can possibly access any of the Pacifica archiving services.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think that should cover it for now.
Are you meeting here?
So you've got about a three-hour discussion request there, Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say that'll take me 3 hours easy. But let me just sort of like the budget part I'll talk a little bit about, but I do want to table that because I don't have the actual budget in front of me. So I know I'm really bad at remembering numbers. I can add numbers, but I'm not good at remembering them. In short, the archives is a staff of, let's see, we have Mariana Berkovich, who's a business manager, Sean Dallas, outreach coordinator, who does the phones and all of the orders, both via premiums from the stations and from listeners. Arlene Chang is a phone person. She, you know, takes orders and does research. We've got Mark Torres, senior producer, producing special programs and preservation operations manager. Edgar Toledo, who does duplication of materials and transfer of masters to digital format. And then we have some volunteers and some temporary positions every now and then, depending upon what our fundraising abilities are. And then we have Addie Gevins, who's our Master of Library Sciences consultant, who's been with the archives as a consultant for more than 12 years, I think, at this level.
Excuse me. What is mute on this call? Is it pounds?
Pound one.
Pound one? Thank you.
Thanks, Don. So it's a very small staff, and with the duties that we have on a regular basis, what we've also taken on since 2000 is the fundraising duties to keep our budget solvent. If you remember, we had $5.5 million in debt in '99, and there was no way the foundation could afford the archives. So we did our on-air fundraising day once a year. This year we did 2 days. That's kept us sort of afloat. In terms of essential services, which is what Sherna's talking about, for Lori's edification, there's the old formula for funding for budget of the archives was 3% levy from all five stations, with LA, Los Angeles station being 1% because they take care of our building expenses, electricity, rent, etc. In 99, when there was no money, 3% of zero is zero, that's when Dan Coffin and Leslie Kagan of the IPNB, and Dan Coffin is the new executive director, gave us the ability to do on-air fundraising and outside of Pacifica fundraising on our own. And since then, we've been raising, this past year, we raised $256,000 on the on-air fundraiser day, and then we had a fundraising party in February where we raised $40,000 as of today. And that's what made Billboard magazine article, which just went online yesterday.
Yay!
Oh,
yay! I'm taking a sip of tea. any questions in there? Just jump. When you hear a pause, it's your turn to jump in and ask a question if you want. All right. So the budget, I believe, is around $685,000 on the whole. What we're starting to see this year in the trend going into this year is that the station fundraising, the use of premiums, which is ordinarily about $55,000 for the archives annually, this year is so far below the trend that we're losing probably $50,000 this year. We would probably be around $25,000 of revenue from the stations using premiums. During their fund drives right now, we're at only 4,000 instead of 25. Speaking with the general managers, all I can say is that for some reason I don't know what the reason is, and I have not really been able to get much out of the general managers. So there's some work to do there, and anything that you guys can do to support, promote, and make suggestions to volunteer programmers, staff members, program directors, and development directors is certainly you're free to do so. A lot of our content in terms of what premiums are is on our website. And I can very well say that the archive premiums are successful because we used only archive premiums on our archives fund drive day, which raised $256,000 in 42 hours. So just in case anybody argues with you that the archives is just a bunch of old stuff nobody cares about, Don't let them tell you that. It's not true.
All right, so what it guarantees also is that the premiums being used by the station are, in fact, mission compliant, which is not true of a lot of the premiums offered at the station.
That's a very good point, Shirna. I'm not sure if there's a requirement of mission compliant premiums, but it certainly is a good thing to think of as you're doing it. And on top of that, also the revenue that's generated by that premium, the money doesn't go to an outside vendor. The money comes back into its own organization.
You mean that little voodoo doll, George Bush voodoo doll that we gave at the premium, KPFT might not be mission compliant?
Well, I'd like one.
What actually is a not mission compliant premium?
Well, if you want to get into this, we've just been going through this at KPFK. For instance, a premium, a 9/11, one of those 9/11 DVDs that included Holocaust denier with anti-Semitic remarks.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay. Let's see. So there's some premium. We're seeing a downtrend in the station's use of the archive. From the Vault, the series, which is now coming up on its year anniversary, we've done 46 episodes. And some stations do air it on a regular basis. Some stations use it as fill-in if a programmer doesn't show up or if there's a preemption and at the last minute they have to do something. Or they take the program and use excerpts and fail to give credit. One of the reasons why we created the From the Vault series was to keep the audience informed and enlightened of the archive's content so that when we come to the archive's fundraising day and when we come to the station fund drives, the audience already has a predetermined judgment on the quality of that premium and the identity of that premium, which is Pacifica generated. And that's what I always try to talk about. I think Don mentioned briefly you wanted me to talk about the content. For Lori and everybody else who forgot, we have about 50,000 reel-to-reel tape masters that do go back to 1949. So the age of our oldest tape is 58, 59 years old from the original Berkeley in the first 6 months of the Berkeley station broadcast in 49, that was the first tape that was entered into the Pacifica archives. So we've got this thing that was created by Vera Hopkins and Eleanor McKinney and Claude Marx way back in the 60s and 70s. And in 73 is when the Pacifica National Board instituted the archives as a real thing. let's see, what else? The content, I can't really say enough about the content right now. It would just take too much. But I think it really is one of the most extraordinary documentations of American history that is still yet unknown by the majority of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the work we have to do. It's really quite huge. I mean, I never really want to talk about the separation of the archives from the Pacifica Foundation, but because it is the foundation, it is the history of what everybody's doing in the stations right now, and I really desire desperately for that intimate relationship between the volunteer program producer in WPFW and other stations with the content of that archive so that they know that there's resources there to use in new programming. There's resources there for research. And ultimately, beyond the scope of our own radio stations, it should go into education. You know, it has been successful that we've donated and made materials accessible, and it has been used in education from universities, thesis, books, documentary films, all the way down to a junior high school research paper. We're very proud of the work that we've done over the years in making these materials known more than they've ever been known before, as well as utilized. And the more grants that we do, the more preservation projects that we do, and the more that we're able to contextualize the materials so that we know what it means to us today and what it means to the people tomorrow is really what our mission is about. It's really about collecting, describing appropriately in the professional manner, and making accessible for research and resources. Research and there's a word I'm missing there, Addie, if you want to throw it in. For research purposes,
information.
Right, not necessarily for sales and revenue generation. So there really is like two worlds we have to live in. One is how does the archive survive financially in the world of Pacifica? The second part is how do we make the materials accessible now and forever for research purposes without the connection of money?
Are they accessible online?
Yes. Yes. If you go to PacificaRadioArchives.org, there is a button called Search the Collection. And the entire database description, which is not all 50,000 tapes, it only represents probably 39,000, I would estimate, of programs. So we still have about 10,000 tapes still to figure out what they are, then describe them appropriately.
But that's the catalog entries that will show you what we've got. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, it's not the audio.
Right. It's okay. Sorry, Loria.
We're very, very far, many, many dimensions from being able to do that.
Right. Thank you, Addie, for making that distinction.
Well, Brian, can you also mention what percentage of the original audio you think has been digitized so far? Do you have an
Yeah. I would say about 3,000 of the 40,000 has been transferred to digital audio. A lot of that, however, has to be redone because it was done below the standards that we now have learned are appropriate for this kind of media. Which is not, we're not behind the curve. Don't get me wrong about that. We're actually way ahead of the curve in terms of our standards, comparatively with other audio collection libraries that are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We are one of the leaders in audio preservation in the country. So what that means is that now, not only have we figured out what the standards are via trial and error and expert consultation with George Blood Audio in Philadelphia, but we've created the standards that everybody else should live up to.
Yay!
The charges would be like, you know, preservation costs per tape. Is that what you mean, Lori?
To access the collection, yeah. Or no. You mean to preserve tape for
what
our own...
What do you want to know?
Yeah, to access the collection. So,
well, to access
so
the catalog, it's free.
Right. But the collection?
Right. To find the records, it's free online, and you can look at the records and find out what you're looking for. To get a piece of the material to use, that you know, as an affiliate station, it's still free. You can use any program. You can use any program for broadcast purposes. When it gets into premium usage, if you want to use some of our material and packaging for fundraising, it's $3 per CD cost.
Great.
But the thing is that the materials that we've already, you know, put through preservation processes and that we have user copies of, that costs us very little to locate, duplicate, and mail. Obviously, that doesn't cost nothing. But if you're interested in something that has not yet been processed, which is most of the collection, that's going to cost a lot of money and time, right?
Right. We have the same situation at our radio station. We have hundreds of reel-to-reel tapes.
Oh, so you know exactly what we're talking about.
And we like Brian's help in preserving them and... Then we're cataloging the content.
What we sort of figured out is per tape, per like 10-inch reel-to-reel tape, it costs about $250 to preserve it.
Is that a one-hour tape?
That is a one-hour tape. Okay. Yeah. So that's sort of what we estimated in terms of what the cost is to ship it to Philadelphia for transfer and an intimate relationship between the sound guy and the tape. And have it being shipped back and labeled properly, and we get all the, you know, what tape stock is it, you know, how is the sound quality, what is the tape stock, and what to do with it afterwards.
Did you not
and catalog
say, Brian,
correction, yes?
Right, that you could send somebody to our station to help us do that at our station with a machine or something, or did you mean that he would help us ship it to Philadelphia?
Right now we would recommend to contact George Blood and figure out, you know, what kind of materials do you have and what you want to really do with them. In terms of the $250 per tape, that also takes care of administration. So, George, that's not what George Blood would charge you for that tape.
Okay. That sounds
reasonable. Okay. Also, on our website, in terms of the catalog database being available, there are some restored materials that we've done through George and through various grants from the NEA and the Grammy Foundation and the Ford Foundation and UC Berkeley Moffitt Library. That materials have been preserved and listed as such, and there's also availability of some audio and some transcripts, which are very important. Mm-hmm. And the more we do, the better we will be able to promote the archives collection. Which sort of brings me to the Adopt-A-Tape program, which we successfully, our Sound of Soul Adopt-A-Tape party, February 18th, did raise $40,000. But what was interesting is that only about 120 people were at the event, and not a single one of them was a KPFK listener. They were all new audience members, if you will, of Pacifica material and were hitherto before unaware of what Pacifica had in its history vault. And we were able to raise $40,000 from it. So I'm very excited at the opportunity of outreaching to the members of the American public to make them more aware of this incredible collection.
Wow, that's interesting. How did it must be a very interesting list that you drew from to attract them to that event.
Indeed. If you go to our archive, and this is so exciting, I can't wait, this is brand new today. On our website, we uploaded video clips, filmed clips, interviews with the people that adopted tapes. So Steve Vai is a rock and roll guitarist he's a rock and roll guitarist, and he adopted something. Right. Oh, yay. Thanks, Bonnie.
What did you say?
So thanks, Bonnie. That's you're actually the person I was going
Bonnie
to ask.
Bonnie knows to be impressed.
Right. Lee Sklar. Oh, I even got a better one, Bonnie. Lee Sklar.
Lee Sklar, very, very well known.
See? So basically, Teresa, what we did was we found a friend and a woman by the name of Allie Willis, who's a songwriter. She was the composer of The Color Purple, the Broadway musical, as well as hits Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, and Boogie Wonderland. I gave her a tour of the archive, and she agreed to lend us her house to host a party. And basically what she did was she gave us 125 of her closest friends to come to the party.
Wow.
So we really did have a list of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, was there. Lee Sklar, Steve Vai, Lily Tomlin, and Jane Wagner were there. The Tony Award-winning star of The Color Purple flew in from New York. So we had a brand new community that we were able to really wow with what Pacifica
really
has in its history vault. And remember, this is music industry people. These are musicians and songwriters. There were probably 8 incredibly famous songwriters at the event who really, as Addie says, really understood the idea of preserving audio sound recordings. The fact that they work in that industry and they know what tape is makes them actually care about James Baldwin and Lorraine Hansberry and the people that we had to present to them that were on recording. So for me, this is like golden in terms of the very first opportunity in my career at Pacifica that I have what I think is
the major donorship program of the century.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And it's just a matter of convincing Lonnie and Greg and members of Pacifica management and leadership that investment into a major donorship program in the archives is necessary to continue the momentum that we've begun.
Her.
Maybe you can help me with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, on our website, you'll see the list of tapes that each individual adopted, as well as some of them will have little video links that you can actually watch somebody talking about why they chose a particular program. And that is promotions as well.
Well, what we can do is send a little explanation of that event with a link to the website, perhaps we could send it to our musician and theater friends saying, this is a great opportunity for a party.
Right,
for example,
right.
I know that Melinda Eiley Doan, who was previously on this committee, several times talked about people that she knew that she would love to introduce to the archives.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Awesome, awesome, Brian. That's just great.
Right. Now, what I did for the party, and it was termed a Black History Month party, and it was Sound of Soul, and we did a lot of design elements, and it was a very expensive party. Far above my expenses allowed when we first got into the budget land last year. But I really did have to sort of put more eggs in this basket than what I previously tried to do, just because of the nature of the audience that we were trying to reach.
But that was a gala.
Yes. It was a very fun gala.
Yeah, it was a silly gala.
It was a silly gala. But, you know, there were a lot of things that worked with it. Because of the Billboard magazine, I kind of don't want to say this if we're being streamed. Just because of the Billboard magazine, we did have some contact with somebody who would be considered like the major donor for the archives and has contacted the archives, and I'm in discussion with them about more major donorship. But I can't drop a name yet.
Right.
But the thing is that, well, first of all, Brian, you can put up, if you hadn't already, which you probably already did, put the link to the article.
Article, yes. Now that should have come. I think I did put that out to Archives Committee today.
Okay, so but people just didn't understand that it was exciting. Anyway, that letter is there, and then you guys can forward it to your people. Okay, and then a thing in terms of planning in the future is if we go through an event, not, you know, it's hard on this year because it's close, but, you know, there's like Women's whatever it is month in March, and, you know, LGBT in June, and there's, you know, there's all these things that come up that are perfect to be able to gather a group of people and for us to be able to target part of the collection.
Right. So in this particular party, we targeted Black History Month. So I was able to create a sales catalog, an adopt-a-tape catalog, with 228 African American Studies collection recordings from the most famous people like Alice Walker on down to panel discussions with people that were very important at the time but aren't the icons of the movement, say in a church in New York City in 67. Very important materials. So out of 228 at this party, 50 tapes were adopted that will go for this formal preservation to Philadelphia. So what we have is left over 178 recordings still to be adopted from the Black History Collection. That is being published on our website in the next couple days, so that people, when they see the Billboard article and then link to our archive site, then they maybe can participate in the Adopt-A-Tape program.
So what was the party called again?
The Sound of Soul Adopt-A-Tape Party. It's on the front page of the archives website.
And repeat the website name again?
PacificaRadioArchives.org.
And is there an
a Native American collection?
Well,
there
we have
is
to
Native,
create them. There's lots of stuff.
Yeah, there is incredible Native American recordings, but we've never done a sub-collection or a listing of those materials in one catalog. Over the years, over the decades, there have been catalogs that have included Native American materials, but they've never been aggregated.
The thing is, if there's a real interest, we can do that and get some people to help advise us so that we are not just picking the same things we happen to have come across before.
Right. I was thinking we have so many interesting, unique tapes that haven't been archived. Would you consider taking on the affiliates content also?
Addie, you know, we have done that in the past. There is representation from affiliate stations, but I actually have to ask Addie about that because the last collection policy that I came across when I came to the archive was that any affiliate station or independent producer had to pay a fee to the archives, which I think at the time of 1995-96 was $25 fee for us to take the tape into the archive.
Oh.
And the last time it...
Just, I don't know if, you know, if maybe that policy needs to get looked at and worked on, but that you now accept only things that have already been digitized, so it doesn't add to the burden of the things that have to be digitized.
Right, which the next thing I was going to say is for me to take on tapes with the burden that we already have with our tapes, I actually couldn't promise you that they would be taken care of.
Right, unless they were donated or something.
Right. You know.
The thing is that right now, there are a few things that we really need so that you can really understand the situation. There was a time when Pacifica wanted to embrace, as much of this kind of material that it could, and that's when... That's when the distribution was done by satellite and by, you know, various means. And so Pacific was trying to take a leadership role in that and also to help independents and other small stations, collect and preserve stuff. But there is, like, no room. Not only
a limited amount of time and room.
Yes. Yeah. We don't have a cataloger.
Yeah,
getting
the picture.
We only have one. Here's a good one, Addie. We only have one tape machine, playback machine.
Oh, no.
To transfer all the tape. In other words,
Real player.
That's an adequate
have a bunch
one.
Of, That's right, we have a bunch of old Atari machines. It's a specific brand. Those are inadequate. They have gone off of maintenance. There are no more parts.
I know.
And we had,
it's not that they're not delicate enough. They're not gentle enough for this state that the tapes are in now.
For the brittle
tapes. We had a donation from an NPR station a few years ago of a reel-to-reel tape machine, which is one of the top of the line, the Cadillacs. And Ed Wong, who is the sound engineer for Jackson Browne's recording studio. Jackson Browne came up to the archives and took a tour, and he fell over backwards with wanting to help. So he immediately, made an appointment for his preservationist sound engineer who does the restoration. Let's say, what was Jackson Browne's big hit in the 80s?
Running on Empty.
That's the one, thank you. Whatever. So anyway, Ed's the guy that's going back to transfer all the individual 24-track reels of that song for preservation. So anyway, so he's an expert. Like, George Blood is our expert in Philadelphia. We're lucky enough to have met Ed Wong in Los Angeles. He came to the station last Saturday and gave an all-day training session with our staff members on how to maintain and maintain that machine and how to transfer material at the standards that he knows, which are pretty much in line with what the standards we've created. So we were incredibly lucky. If we had to buy Ed Wong to do that work,
we would not have been able to afford it.
Well, the thing is, you guys, if anybody, whenever somebody comes into the station that you guys lure up to the archives, that's where all these amazing things have happened, because there are people out there who really care.
Who love
just
it.
Like sitting at the, whatever you call it,
The Sound of Soul party?
At the party, sitting at the desk, at the ticket desk in the front.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like all these people who, everybody who came up just really cared so much about this collection and cared so much about preserving the tapes. I mean, just the kind of things that people said when they were just coming in and giving us their little checks to come in.
It was part of everybody's history.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So in fact, the first... Go ahead, Addie. Sorry.
Well, it's just that we have... It should be very, very important for us to be able to publicize the fact of the archive's existence. Mm-hmm. When people become aware of it, people outside of the little circle of Pacifica and Pacifica stations and listeners, beyond that, there is enormous, there's a huge and diverse population of people who really care and will help support that historic work. And we have
definitely
to find ways to reach out to it. And that's what Brian's been able to do, that's been a real huge step forward from anywhere else we've been able to go in the past.
This is AC. But Brian, the question that I want to ask is, You said that you had archived very few of the Native American people's culture, I guess. And the question is, don't you think that would have a tremendous appeal to people to have a project on that, to try and, I know you got lots of projects there, but have something special. A special effort to get a greater and diverse element of that culture archived.
Right. There's a couple ways we can go with that, AC, and actually what we have in Native American is quite a lot. I didn't mean to imply that we had just a few and I didn't know what they were. We have a lot of Native American materials that are very, very significant. Right, we have some of the very first tapes. The very first tape, that 1949, the tape that was broadcast in the first 6 months of Pacifica, the tape that I call the oldest surviving recording in public radio history, that is a Native American recording. Jaime Diongolo's Indian tales, Indian stories being told orally, recorded in 1949, broadcast on Pacifica. Jaime Diongolo. D'Angulo. You can look him up. He's published. He was a Latino who just got. It was an anthropologist. All right. So now enough about my history lesson for today. But I can send you some more information about that later, Lori. Yes, Native American collection, LGBT collection, women's movement collection, Black History Month materials. There's so many religious materials. There's, the anti-war, the protest demonstrations and rallies. We only touched the tip of the iceberg with the Ford Foundation grant. We only preserved 25 recordings of protests and rallies. We happen to choose 25 very, very good ones and significant ones, but there's a lot more. So in terms of this party, the Sound of Soul and the Black History Month, it really was an experiment. It was a creative idea that I was betting my career on, and luckily we were very successful. But it was only because we had an audience and a friend list by somebody who was famous and actually had a big enough list to get 100 people to her house that had money. What was really bizarre, not even 5 members of our 1,000 mailing list that we sent invitations to responded or came to our party.
Oh, so most of it was the word of mouth of the artist.
No, it was the invitations from, but it was sort of like being at a wedding where like it was all the bride's family and none of the groom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we tried to do an investigation. We actually thought the mail, the post office, dumped our invitations because they knew who we were. we tried everything. We have no idea why our own people in Los Angeles didn't respond to the invitation. It's okay now because we actually did it successfully. But what it taught us is that there's an audience outside of the Pacifica community that we have to outreach to because they're the ones that care just as much, if not more, because
they
were previously unaware of it.
Oh yeah.
You know, sometimes
Pacifica, I feel like we're doing their work. Sort of.
Brian. You said that there were 170 more tapes that need to be adopted. When is the next on-air fund drive? Could that be a really big push during that fund drive? Those other 178?
The on-air fund drive has not been spoken of this year for next year broadcast. Mm-hmm. So there's a little discussion we have to have with the stations and the development people, et cetera. But in terms of the adopt-a-tape on the air, we put together the adopt-a-tape idea a couple years ago, and we were never able to really achieve much from it because when you pitch on the air, you're pitching a concept and a single tape, the title of a single tape, and we were never able to get a lot of return on the adopt-a-tape. Certainly not $40,000 in 4 hours. That's sort of why we tried to have this party and create this adopt-a-tape in-person idea, and it worked. Mm-hmm. So, in talking with the general managers at the station, I told them about it and basically said, this is an idea that can be duplicated in every city. I can bring the Sound of Soul Black History Month catalog party to New York City if we find the right venue, the right person, the right publicity. And we can make it work there as well. But it does take a lot of work. I must say, this one really almost kicked me in the behind in terms of how do you create a party to raise that kind of money when you've never done it before. At least now we know a little bit more.
It takes a lot, doesn't it?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It really is quite extraordinary, and look forward to doing more of that. But in the land, Sherna, I know you're going to hear this well. Think about the resources it took for 7 staff members to do the kind of work that it takes to do a gala event, having never done it before. Did it successfully?
While we were working every day.
While we were working every day, what didn't we put our energies into?
I'm doing it this week.
But that means, Brian,
as a matter of fact,
you mentioned
right.
that you don't have a cataloger. I'm not understanding. I thought that we got that in the budget a while ago.
We did get it in the budget, and it's still in the budget. The position is posted, and I have to admit, I really have not had time during my day to devote attention to doing a hire. I'm by myself. I've asked for help from National Office and the Human Resources Director and have had no help. My energy is from the months leading into the on-air fund drive and the months leading into this event. In other words, my energies are devoted to raising money. Wait a minute. I'm not finished yet.
All right.
The cataloger position, when it was originally posted, we really did intend to do that. But the Democracy Now! Contract required that the archive copy, digitize, and duplicate every single Democracy Now! Program and send it to Democracy Now! Within a time limit.
Mm.
That cost the archives $25,000 in personnel to do the work, as well as the shipping and the tape buying and the CD buying. And we had that when they did the contract, they didn't budget it. Nobody put money into the archives budget to take care of the requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So where does Brian get the money to do the job that's required?
Mm-hmm.
I was actually told by Amy Goodman that she would not go on the on-air fundraiser for the archives unless we did this job by a certain date.
So I had to take
the money from the cataloger position to complete the required work from the contract. And then we get to the next board meeting when I'm accused of hiring the From the Vault producer instead of hiring a cataloger. Let me tell you, the From the Vault producer was the same person that did the Democracy Now! Duplication of 700 tapes. Multiply that by my cost of $250.
What type of tape?
700 tapes times $250 is what really what we spent in kind, in terms of what all of our work did, as well as fulfilling Pacifica National's contract that they did not consider us in.
Well,
so when
I
we get to the argument of the cataloger hire, I get really prickly.
Yeah.
Because I've been trying for years and years and
Brian,
still get backset.
I believe that the archive committee should be recommending, we can't do anything on this call, but the next call we should be thinking about recommending to the team who is working on the new Democracy Now! Contract that serious attention be paid to any requirements made by Democracy Now! Of the archive, and that that be fully budgeted.
Right. I'm on that task force as well as Don White's on the task force.
Yes.
And he'll tell you that I have spoken about this issue on the task force, the very first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, our job is done in terms of archives and the and Democracy Now! The questions that arise with Democracy Now! Are the original master tapes that we've already duplicated for them. Do we keep them? And accept the burden financially and spatially of those tapes? Do we consider them Pacifica history, or do we consider them Democracy Now! Owned?
Brian, I'm reluctant to go into more details of what we want from or expect from contracts. Can we kind of go into some other details of maybe what people might want to know about the archives? Because I think
might I also break in and just remind people that we have about 10 minutes left?
Yeah, well, actually, I have to go off the call in about 3. I'll just go off. I won't make a big deal so I don't interrupt the conversation.
I need to leave to do it myself.
Okay, before you go, Sherna, I would like to ask if Don and Sherna, and I don't know who the third L.A. representative is.
Lamont,
if we could arrange an in-person meeting, because I would love for you three to meet with the archive staff at a convenient time, so that together we can go over some things, because I think that that's one of the things that I really would like to correct from last year's committee.
That's a good idea.
Yes. I'm only about 2 steps from your office right now. I'm in the computer room.
Not there.
I'm not there. Oh, come on. You mean you left early tonight? Okay. No, I'm only kidding.
Early. Brian, can I just
patient
on the issue of the cataloger. So is the money in the budget now?
Yes, it is. But I'm going up next Monday to meet with Greg and Lonnie about our budget because the premium sales that I talked about earlier have, you know, taken us down $50,000. Our tape sales to the public we've been losing about $7,000 a month on tape sales to the public because most of the material that people usually would call the archives to do a copy of is available for free download or podcasting or streaming, which is good. You know, we all love everybody being able to hear Pacifica material online, but it does cut into where people would get that material otherwise. So we are seeing a financial problem that we're going to have to, like, relook at our priorities for this year.
But what I was going to suggest, Brian, is that if it would help, if, you know, maybe you can consider the formation of a search committee for that cataloger, so it would help you to get moving on it. Because, you know, we've been calling for a cataloger since this committee first started. But that way, you know, some people could do some of the upfront work and maybe take some of the burden off of you.
If you three would come in person to the archives and meet with you, I'd be glad to work with you on that. You know, there are some real basic things that could be done easily with some help that I just can't get, you know, an hour outside of my regular job, out of my regular other duties to do. But, you know, just so you know that Addie is, you know, on that search committee. Like, in other words, I vet candidates, and then Addie vets them in the final throw because she is the Master of Library of Sciences.
Now, I'm talking about, like, to help earlier in the process so that it you know, it might take some of those.
No, I think that's a great idea. I mean, we had some of the problems we had in the past, frankly, were that at the salary we were able to offer, mm-hmm. we weren't getting candidates. You know, mm-hmm. we went through one whole application round where no matter how hard we tried to wish, really none of the applicants were qualified or appropriate.
Can I ask what salary that was?
We do have, yeah, you can, but I'm going to have to look it up to tell you.
Okay.
I mean, I just really don't remember. But,
you mean what was the salary or what is the salary posted
salary?
Now?
The
salary before was $28,000 a year.
Yeah.
We were able to increase that this year to about $32,000.
How does that compare with a library cataloger? You know?
No, I don't know.
The thing is, we can discuss. I mean, it takes too long, I think, to discuss on the call, but there are a lot of things that we need somebody who's really specialized and also really cares and will fit in.
Right. I just want to make sure you're even in the ballpark in terms of salary.
So the thing is that there are other things that have to do with the expected life of the institution.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had some candidates in the past who, you know, wouldn't really bet on that because they tend to be conservative, you know, if not in politics in their lives. But, however, the thing is we do have some better connections now, and I think it could be really, really helpful. I think you guys can really help us.
Mm-hmm. Are you on a master's degree?
Brian, maybe Don and I could figure out our schedules and maybe come in before we have a meeting next Monday and then the following Tuesday. Oh, Don.
Absolutely. I would be willing to do that.
Okay,
Brian.
Thanks,
Brian. Sure. Okay. I think that was Cherna leaving.
It was.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Brian, if they come in, we can talk on the phone just to make sure, you know, things like we do have a master's requirement, but if we had someone with 10 years experience,
yes.
cataloging audio tapes, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sort of out of wind. it's not that I don't have more to say. I'm just sort of exhausted with what I've already presented. I guess the only other thing that I really want to talk about is the Library of Congress testimony. The Library of Congress, you know, in terms of Addie saying that, you know, the work that we've done over the past years, you know, I'd say 6 years ago, we would not have been able to enter into the community of catalogers and archivists. They would not have known who we were or what we were doing. Because of the work that we've done, and being recognized by the Library of Congress, and being at the decision-making table with Congress on sound preservation, and again, we are one of the leaders in audio preservation for audio archives. Now we're sort of on the books of institutions that people who are qualified would want to work with. So that's what Addie was trying to say in terms of we've raised our profile in a lot of different ways. We are meeting and greeting with communities and professions that otherwise would not have recognized us for, whether it be political reasons or just awareness, lack of awareness.
And one of the reasons, because the archives has been incredibly generous about sharing, every bit of knowledge we get is posted on the website. I mean, every everything we learn about standards, everything
right.
that we get from, you know, a consultant, everything we post on the website so that other people who are involved in this kind of work can share it.
Right. And it does work. We do get calls from audio libraries or archives that have small audio collections in amongst a lot of paper that have no machines to play it back on and need some information, need to figure out how to do it. And that's what we've been able to do and provide for the community at large. Which also just, I guess we should announce that we received today was the official release that we did receive a new grant from the Grammy Foundation for $35,000.
Oh, terrific.
Yay.
So that begins in October of 2008 and is a 2-year project that will restore 300 tapes as well as digitizing, I think, 5 folio folios.
How much
money? So we, $35,000.
Wow.
And a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the project on the whole is much more expensive because, you know, Pacifica is going to pay for the rest of the project as created that the Grammy Foundation doesn't pay for.
Because
good.
To a large extent what these grants do is help to leverage the priorities of the archives towards preservation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we're in the middle of, smack dab in the middle of a National Endowment for the Arts grant, which will end in October, which in turn, that's when the Grammy grant begins. So we are definitely on our way. And don't forget, Pacifica National Board members, that there was a motion passed to levy the stations $150,000for the next 2 years for tape preservation. What we really haven't been able to do is articulate what the money goes for, how it will be retrieved or levied from the stations without causing so much impact that, you know, we're hated forevermore. And what that money will actually do. Addie and I do have, a very basic proposal. However, we're really not able to work with the board in terms of those details. In other words, if we were to, like, hash out all those details, one detail per PNB meeting, it would still take 5 years to pass a motion. So I really kind of don't know where to begin with that or where to take up that motion. But, you know, the PNB members that are on the call, if you want to sort of, like, put it in your brain and think about it, I would love to hear some suggestions of how to motivate that. Because we do have a lot of tapes that we could get preserved very quickly if we had the money.
And we've got the background now. We've put the years into the preservation, so we actually know what we're doing. Yeah.
Right.
You know, Brian, just speaking both as a archives committee person, but also as a staff member of one of the radio stations, to my mind, I think a report from you as to what you think the outcome of the work that will be done using that money would be really helpful, because I think it might build some enthusiasm from people at the stations, because you can understand that this particular motion caused an eyebrow or two to raise.
Right, right.
being one of the people at the station that is trying to raise money continually, it seems.
Right.
I think if we were to be able to imagine the good that could come from it,